by accepting avatara, incarnations, yani, all those, atmatantraha, self-independent, bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, triyadishaha, the Lord of the three worlds, yata, as much as, sasaraja, created, agre, at first, idam, this cosmic manifestation, niriha, although desireless, samstapya, by establishing, brittim, means of livelihood, jagataha, of the universes, vidhate, as he regulates. O great sage, kindly narrate how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the independent, desireless Lord of the three worlds and the controller of all energies, accepts incarnations and creates the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regulated principles for its maintenance. Purport. Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead from whom the three creative incarnations, namely the Purusha avatars, Karanarnavasai Vishnu, Gabadakasai Vishnu and Chiradakasai Vishnu, expand. The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas in successive stages under the external energy of the Lord, and thus material nature is controlled by him. Now, can anybody explain that sentence for me? The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas in successive stages. Well, that's okay, right? That's fine. Now, under the external energy of the Lord. I don't think that's right. That's not right. And then the next statement, and thus material nature is controlled by him. That sentence does not make sense. How can the three Purushas be under the external energy of the Lord? Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. And then Prabhupada says, and thus material nature is controlled by him. What do you reckon? I looked at this a lot this morning, that sentence. It just doesn't make sense. The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas. That means they're in charge of the material energy. But then it says, under the external energy of the Lord. Doesn't make sense. So anyway, write a letter to the BBT, I think, ask them. Thinking material nature to be independent is like seeking milk from the nipple-like bags on the neck of a goat. The Lord is independent and desireless. He does not create the material world for his own satisfaction, as we create our household affairs to fulfill our material desires. Actually, the material world is created for the illusory enjoyment of the conditioned souls who have been against the transcendental service of the Lord since time immemorial. But the material universes are full in themselves. There is no scarcity for maintenance in the material world. Because of their poor fund of knowledge, the materialists are disturbed when there is an apparent increase of population on the earth. Whenever there is a living being on the earth, however, his subsistence is immediately arranged by the Lord. The other species of living entities, who far outnumber human society, are never disturbed for maintenance. They are never seen dying of starvation. It is only human society that is disturbed about the food situation, and to cover up the real fact of administrative management, takes shelter in the plea that the population is excessively increasing. If there is any scarcity in the world, it is the scarcity of God consciousness. Otherwise, by the grace of the Lord, there is no scarcity of anything. Om Jnanate Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chachurun Militam Tena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Tena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svavadantikam Mukkam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Mande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, Vidura is inquiring from Maitreya. So, Vidura's inquiring from Maitreya about the creation. Yata sasaja gra, yata sasaja gra. Idam niriha. Bhagavan Triadisha. Atmatantra Bhagavan Triadisha. So, he wants to know how the Lord manifests the material realm, the material world, how he controls all of the energies. Triyadishaha. Right? The Lord of the three worlds. Yata sasara jagri idam nariha. And although he is desireless, which means without material desires, because the Lord also has desire. Right? Atmatantraha means he's self-independent. So he doesn't have to create anything for his purposes or for the satisfaction of his senses, because he's already self-satisfied. So, Prabhupada says here, the personality of Godhead is Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. And from him come the Purusha avatars. Karanar Navashai, or Mahavishnu. Then Garbhodakashaya Vishnu and Chiradakashaya Vishnu, which is, you know, the sequence of events that Prabhupada refers to here. First of all, Mahavishnu appears within the Karana Jal, and that environment is considered to be purely spiritual. Well, it's a cloud that exists within the spiritual sky. The spiritual sky is clear and unclouded, but a small portion of that spiritual sky becomes cloudy. And within that cloud is what's inside clouds? Water, right? And in that water, the Lord lies down on Ananta Sesh, and from his resting there, while he breathes, then the universes come out of the pores of his skin. Well, as he breathes, right? And then as the universes come out, then within those universes exist he enters again in another expansion as the Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, and from that the navel pit, Prabhupada says sometimes, the navel lake, a lotus stem grows, and in that lotus stem exist the planetary systems. The three planetary systems that he's mentioned here. There's upper, middle and lower planetary systems. Triadish, the Lord of the three worlds, he exists there in charge of that manifestation. On top of the lotus, Lord Brahma is born. And of course the Lord also exists within the atoms, within the heart of everyone, within everything, as the Paramatma. Right? The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas in successive stages. And this is it, under the external energy of the Lord. But Karana Dakshaya Vishnu's got not under the external energy of the Lord, is he? No. If anybody can make sense out of that sentence, please let me know. The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas in successive stages under the external energy of the Lord, and thus material nature is controlled by him. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, Prabhupada says here, thinking material nature to be independent is like seeking milk from the nipple-like bags on the neck of a goat. Right. What happens if you try to milk the neck of a goat? Anybody tried? No. You don't get anything. Right. So, you know, if we think that the material energy is the source of the creation, if you just take material elements and try to create something from it, what do you get? What do you get? Nothing. Right? Material energy by itself, you know, Prabhupada says, you may have the ingredients that support or facilitate, or they might even appear to manifest life as such. But actually, without the spiritual energy, without the presence of the Lord, Without the presence of a person, nothing will happen. Prabhupada's example is of a motor car. You may have a motor car, perfectly engineered motor car with the keys in the ignition and everything, but you could let the motor car stand still for 10 million years and nothing will happen. Right? Just got the material energy. It's all being nicely engineered and manufactured and put together so that it could work. But it won't drive anywhere unless there's a person that gets in the car and drives it. So the spiritual energy or the spiritual potency of the Lord or the Lord himself, because he's the source of all spiritual energy, has to be present in order for things to work properly. If the Lord didn't enter into the material creation, then nothing would happen. It would just be dull, inert, dead matter. Matter in and of itself has no life. And the material creation is made up of the material energy, but it is powered by the force of the spiritual, you know, originally coming from the glance of Lord Vishnu, where he impregnates all the living entities into the material energy. Then it all, you know, that impregnation is the, I was just reading this morning in the Brahma Samhita, it's the impetus to act for action, and which kicks into play the time factor so that everything works and then it moves along. But without that spiritual presence, without the glance of Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu, without that glance, then the material energy would be inactive. Because there's two energies, basically, the material energy and the spiritual energy. And without the presence of the spiritual energy, without the presence of life, that's where life comes from, then nothing works. Just as a woman may give birth to a child that's stillborn, it's got all the pieces, all the bits and pieces, just like the motor car. It's got all the bits and pieces are there. Got five fingers on each hand, five toes on each foot. Everything else, you know, everything is perfectly formed, but there's no spirit soul, and so therefore no action. Nothing happens. You can shove in as many chemicals as you like, you know, jolt it with electricity, blah, but nothing will happen. So the material energy doesn't work without the presence of these, is not manifest and doesn't work without the impetus or the presence and power, impetus, I think is the right word, for action, which comes from the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First of all, in the form of Mahavishnu, material creation is exhibited, manifest, expands out from him as he breathes out. Then as he breathes in, it comes back again. And, you know, that material energy, once manifest, is then controlled by the Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, then managed by the super soul. Ishwaraham, what is it? Ishwaro what is it? Hridesha Rajuna Tishtati Brahmayan Savabhutta Nam Janta Rudani Mayaya. What's the first line of that verse? Ishvaraha Savabhutanam, is that it? Riddesha Arjuna Tishtati, yeah. So, Krishna says there, very clearly, Ishvaraham Savabhutanam. I am the controller of all living entities. I exist within the heart. That's the super soul. Who's situated as if sitting on a machine made of the material energy. And we see it, you know, the material energy works. One of the arguments that always used to occur to me before I became a devotee was that there's so much order and process in the working of the material creation. You know, summer comes, spring comes, summer comes, autumn comes, winter comes. You know, everything's working according to the plan. The sun comes up, the sun goes down, the stars move around. Everything moves according to an order or a structure. So where does that order or structure come from? You know, forget about the Big Bang. You know, Big Bang theory is just a theory, right? It's never been demonstrated. There's no proof of such a thing. And it's highly implausible. You know, the example is given. You know, if you have, you know, the chances of this order, this structure and order coming out of an explosion is like, the chance of having an explosion in a printing shop producing, you know, a page of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's just not going to happen. Order and structure doesn't come out of chaos. It's the other way around. So, you know, you get more chaos. Chaos means chaos, not order and structure. So we see everything working according, and here it's described. Vidhate jagata jagato vidhate. He regulates, right? We have the word vidhi. It means rules and regulations. Regulated lifestyle. It's recommended that we live a regulated lifestyle. Be detached and be regulated. Ordered, structured. This is the mode of goodness, actually. And from that, you know, steady application of devotional practice with regulation and detachment, we gradually make advancement. Right? In an ordered and structured way. Not by, motive, passion, explosive type activities to produce, you know, something substantial. It requires steadiness and determination and following of these rules and regulations. So the Lord has created the universe, the universal affairs, in a very structured and ordered fashion. And, you know, one only has to look at it to see that there's that structure and order, which indicates purpose, right? Meaning and purpose. For the non-devotees, for the materialists, very, very difficult to see order, to see the hand of somebody behind that order. They can't see it. Very difficult. The devotees can see it because they have somewhat purified consciousness and purified senses, and so they can appreciate and relish and adore the Lord who is, you know, orchestrating everything. We may not be able to see Him. You know, with our eyes, we may not be able to see Him. But you know, we can't see so many things. So what? When think about it, Prabhupada says, you know, seeing is quite coarse. And there are so many things that you can't see. You just can't see them. Right? We all know about ultraviolet rays, right? Or at least those of us who have got fair skin. Go outside in the sunshine. You can feel that sun, you know, drilling into your head. You can't see it. Right? Can't see it. But you know that you can certainly see the result of it. You'll have a badly burnt head. Right? So, you know, there are so many things that we can't see. But we don't see with our material eyes. Actually, we're encouraged not to see with our material, not to trust what we see with our eyes. But rather we are meant to see with our ears. This is considered to be a higher platform of receiving knowledge. True hearing. You can't see the spirit's eye. We can't see, you know, you can't see Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu or Chira Dakshaya Vishnu. What to speak of Karana Dakshaya Vishnu. So how do we find out about him? We find out about the presence and the purpose of the Lord by hearing from superior sources. And so we can see. We can see with the vision of the Shastra. Shastra Chakshus. We see with the vision of the Shastra. And in that way, we understand the activities of the Lord, which is what Vidura is doing here, asking Maitreya, tell me, how does the personality of Godhead, who is independent and desireless, who's the controller of all, how does he accept incarnations and in this way create the material manifestation? How does he do that? How are we going to see that? How are we going to see the beginning of creation? You know, this is the modern scientific method. They think that if they get a telescope, right, and they plonk it somewhere, and then if they look far enough into the universe, they're going to see the beginning of it. Is that right? That's what they're doing, isn't it? And they tell us, you know, oh yeah, there's some really big explosions out there. And we might see the beginning of some of them. And from that, we can then work out, you know, how we got to where we are. Am I right? Is that what they're doing? That's what they tell us what they're doing. We think, hang on a second. You know, the creation already happened. It doesn't matter how far you look into outer space, you're not going to see it because it's already happened. Is that right? It's already happened. Long time ago. So what are you going to see? You know, totally dependent on this, you know, the capacity to see things. Same with a microscope, you know, they hope to be able to peer into the depths of the, you know, the atoms and the molecules, and somehow they'll be able to see the beginning of everything, the source of everything. But, you know, they never come up with, they never say, oh, yeah, we've seen the supersoul. We discovered the supersoul in all of the atoms. Nobody ever comes up with that. They just come up with more little bits and pieces. Which is like, so what? Oh, okay. We'll find out about, you know, typical kind of motor passion, demonic character. Okay, what we'll do is we'll get these little particles and we'll smash them together and see what they're made of, right? And then we'll know what's going on. And they haven't got a clue. Just wasting people's money. Building, you know, useless machines that hurtle atoms around and around so they bang into each other. And always with the promise, you know, we'll discover the source of everything, hopefully, possibly, maybe. So this is not a very effective way of gaining knowledge. More effective is to hear from the right source. That's Prabhupada says, the blind faith method is as good, if not better, than the empiric method. And he gives the example of fire. If you tell somebody what fire is, and then what it looks like, what its qualities are, and a person accepts it on blind faith that this is what fire is, then when he finds fire, he realizes, oh, there's fire. Right? The empirical method is, you know, measure it, test it, test the warmth, test the heat, then eventually come to the conclusion, oh yeah, this is fire. But Prabhupada makes the point, each one of them comes to the same conclusion, but the person with blind faith, he just accepts. He accepts from authority. Yeah, this is what fire is. When he sees it, oh, there's fire. So similarly, you know, the process of approaching Krishna, especially by the devotees, is accepted on faith. And in some cases, or in many cases, just blind faith. And there are other ways of approaching the Lord indirectly. The bhakti process is the direct process by which we can connect. And of course, when we come in contact with Krishna through the process of devotional service, then we don't have to be convinced. The realization is experienced within, and so that direct perception of the Lord and his energies is revealed to the devotees, and when they experience it, they recognize it because it's already been described for them before in the Shastra. So they meet, or we meet, the personality of Godhead initially in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the pages of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, one of the devotees in England wanted to ask Prabhupada, does Krishna speak the Bhagavad Gita in all planets, in all places? So she asked him, Prabhupada, does Krishna speak the Bhagavad Gita in the hellish planets? And Prabhupada said, yes, we're discussing the Bhagavad Gita here in London. Right? Prabhupada was always quite keen to put down the British because he said they're so proud. Right? So we hear of Krishna and we experience Krishna through the hearing process, and then we get a direct perception of Krishna through the practice of devotional service. We're able to recognize Krishna's presence because we've already heard about him from himself in the Bhagavad Gita. For a start, pratyakshavagamam dhamyam, the process of religion, is perfected in that those activities which directly reveal within the heart our relationship with God, with Krishna. Why we're encouraged to perform devotional service. We perform devotional service because that's the means by which we can get direct connection with Krishna. So the Lord is independent and desireless. So he doesn't need to create the material creation. But the material creation is put into action, put into play, because of the desires of the living entities. You know, this is the basis of responsibility, really. You know, people don't want to accept their karma or their suffering. They want to blame it all on God. But actually, God creates the material world because of the desires of the living entities. It's what they want, not what he wants. And that's what Prabhupada says here. The material world, actually, the material world is created for the illusory enjoyment of the conditioned souls. The material world wouldn't be here if we didn't have the desire to want to enjoy it. Even though the desire to enjoy the material world means ultimately you desire your own suffering. But that's the nature of the material world. Janma mitya jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anadarshanam. Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, the material world is a place for suffering, not a place for enjoyment. So therefore, he doesn't create the material world for his purposes. He's already got the spiritual world, which is perfect for his purposes. Right? No jamma mitya jara vyadhi, are conspicuous by their absence. No birth, no death. No old age, no disease in the spiritual world. So Krishna's already got a perfect place for enjoyment. But he accepts the role of the different Purusha avatars to manifest the material creation so that we get the opportunity to exercise our independence, but we also get the opportunity to suffer the consequences and as a consequence be rectified, to have our enjoying mentality or enjoying principle propensity curbed. Now, Prabhupada says you only have to have a smidgen of material desire to stay in the material world. Just a little bit will keep us. And so that's why the Lord creates the material creation. Because that's what we want, not because he wants it. And then Prabhupada explores an interesting point here at the end of the purport. He says, the material world is created in full. It's fully manifest. Om Purnam Adapurnam Idam. Right? The whole of the material creation is complete in and of itself. And so then Prabhupada says, there is no scarcity for maintenance in the material world. And Prabhupada says, you know, if you look around, we don't see the birds dying of starvation. Not around here, we don't. Certainly. You don't see the fish in the fish pond dying of starvation. Or the fish in the ocean. It's only the human beings who mismanage things that you know, they create malnutrition and famine and so forth. And then people die. That's because of mismanagement. There are enough resources within the creation to feed everyone. And Prabhupada says, you know, because of their poor fund of knowledge, the materialists are disturbed when there is an apparent increase of population on the earth. But Prabhupada says the population remains the same. Right? It's not an increase of population. It's just a shifting between one species and another. That a person with a transcendental vision can see that. It's the moving of the living entities from one species to another, reaping the rewards or the results of their karma. So the transcendentalists or the devotees who are actually able to see these things, and those with a materialistic bent who want to enjoy the material creation, and this is the problem, wanting to enjoy rather than using the facility for what its real purpose is, means that there are some who are hoarding and then making creating a disadvantage for others. Prabhupada said, there is no scarcity for maintenance in the material world. Whenever there is a living being on the earth, however, his subsistence is immediately arranged by the Lord. And the devotees should understand this. This is a very important point for the devotees to understand, that Krishna is looking after us. He's looking after everybody. But especially, he looks after his devotees. Personally looks after his devotees, he says. That verse in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the one that Ramanuja Acharya was pondering, right? Where Krishna says, you know, I personally look after the devotees. I carry what they lack, and I maintain what they carry, what they have. But sometimes the devotees don't think that Krishna is going to look after us. Right? Or even the non-devotees think. You know, the non-devotees will criticize the devotees. Oh, you're sick. Or you're dying. Why doesn't God look after you now? But actually, Krishna has our best interests at heart, and he's looking after us. He provides for us. Ramanujacharya wasn't sure about this point, so he crossed out the mum, I think, in his commentary, or was it in the Bhagavad Gita itself. Then there's a story how he went away and two young boys came to their house and were pleading with Ramanuja's wife, please take these foodstuffs. Your husband is beating us and we want you to accept these foodstuffs as an offering so that he won't beat us anymore. Worse to that effect. And they showed the bruisings on their back. And at first you didn't believe them. My husband's not like that. He doesn't do it. But they convinced. And then they left the foodstuffs. And then Ramanuja came back and his wife was eating. She was eating. And you know, in a traditional Indian setting, the wife won't eat until after everybody else has eaten. So he was upset. She was eating dinner before he got home. Right? And but she was doing so out of protest because she believed the young boys that he was abusing them. So she then told him the story, because he's asking, what happened? What's got? And she asked him, do you beat your children? He said, no, I never. But then he realised, he said, who were these boys anyway? What did they look like? Then he realised it's Krishna and Balaram. And then he realised his understanding of the verse wasn't that his energy or his potency looks after the devotees, but he himself looks after his devotees. The devotee surrendered to Krishna and just worshipping Krishna with all of his heart and with all of his energy, with all of his soul effort, then Krishna looks after such a devotee. And so for the devotees, there's no lack, because in the creation, if everybody were to work according to the order of the Lord or the intention of the Lord from the pious devotional principles, from the pious devotional aspect viewpoint, then if we work like that, in the Upanishad it says, you could go on living like that for hundreds and hundreds of years, right? Knowing well to whom which everything belongs, right? We all get a quota, but that quota ultimately is given to us by Krishna for Krishna's purposes. Material creation or material prosperity and material advancement is never meant for sense gratification, the Bhagavad Gita tells us. It's meant for living a balanced life, so a regulated life, so that we can make advancement in spiritual knowledge, spiritual understanding, spiritual realization. And we see that with the behaviour of the animals. There's no hoarding. There's a minimal amount of hoarding for one's own personal requirements, but not more than that. That's the arrangement. That's the order of the Lord. So when we act in consideration of and in recognition of the fact that the material creation is manifest for our purification and it's not meant for our enjoyment, then we can all live peaceably together for hundreds and thousands of years without trouble, without a disturbance. But because of a lack of understanding and a lack of appreciation of how the material creation comes into being and how it is manifest through the auspices of the Mahavishnu, Gabhadakasai Vishnu, Jiradakasai Vishnu, and that he has a purpose. Nobody knows what the purpose is of the material creation. And they don't want to find out. And so therefore, as a consequence, being greedy to enjoy the facilities of the material energy, they accumulate more than is required. They consume more than is required. Then when there's a lacking, they become despondent, discouraged, or they fight with each other. Prabhupada says here, if there's any scarcity in the world, it is the scarcity of God consciousness. Otherwise, by the grace of the Lord, there is no scarcity of anything. There is plenty. So if we're able to see or at least appreciate the presence of the Lord manifest in the form of the the Purusha avatars, and we understand the purpose of the Purusha avatars and what the material creation is manifest for our making spiritual advancement. You know, when we learn to see these things and we act then in accordance with the purpose of the Lord, then we become one with the Lord. At least one in purpose. That's real oneness, not we become one, you know, one, all one. That's ridiculous. We are all one, yeah. But there's a difference in quantity, Prabhupada says. We are little and he is big, bahunam. What is that? Chaitanas chaitananam, nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam, eko bahunam, yo vidadhati kamam. That one eternal living entity in the form of the Lord, because we're also living entities and we're also eternal, but there's one who's providing for all of the others. That's Krishna. So when we recognize his, you know, purpose and his order and structure and maintenance of everything for a particular purpose, and we understand that purpose and we work cooperatively with that purpose, then Krishna will easily look after us, give us more than we require. Prabhupada gives the example that Lord Vishnu has 10 arms. So what can you hang on to? What can we hang on to with 2 arms that somebody with 10 arms can't take away from us? He can take everything away from us very easily. And from time to time, when Krishna shows us special favour, he takes away everything with his 10 arms. Huh? We think, no, what's happening? But actually Krishna's favouring us. And then when he's taken everything away to test our sincerity and to test our devotion, and we pass the test, then he gives it all back with 10 arms. So Prabhupada says, what can you hold with your 2 arms? When he gives everything, what can you hold on with 2 arms that he gives with 10 arms? Not possible. So we have to learn also, in the face of adversity, that actually that is Krishna's arrangement for us and our purification. It's meant for our purification. He's our well-wisher. Suridam savabhutanam. So if he's taking something away from us, that doesn't mean that he doesn't like us. You know, just like children. When they get punished by their parents, they think their parents don't like them. But actually, it's done out of love and affection for the child. So similarly also, we need to see or understand the presence of the Lord and what his purpose is, what the purpose of his creation actually is, so that we can work cooperatively with him and benefit as a result. Okay, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Which one?
The 10 incarnations.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So is that, you know, coming from Vishnu or Krishna?
Yes.
What is the answer?
The answer is yes.
No, from whom?
From whom?
From Krishna or from Vishnu?
The material creation? What we're talking about?
No, the 10 incarnations.
The 10 incarnations, except for Krishna himself, It's described in the Bhagavad Gita. Ete champsa kala pompsa kushnastu bhagavan swayam indrari vyakalam lokam indrari yuge yuge mridayanti yuge yuge. Yeah. So when Krishna, all of the other incarnations are expansions of the Vishnu forms. But when Krishna comes, he comes personally himself. But ultimately, they all come from Krishna anyway. But yes, that's how it works. Krishna comes directly from Goloka when he appears, but otherwise, the other forms come manifest as expansions of Lord Vishnu. Yeah. I'm not sure why Krishna does it like that, but that's what the Bhagavatam says. Right? Anything else? Okay. Kondaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Gaura Bhakta Pinda Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.